from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into this very special live edition of Dog Nation Daily from the Riverwalk in New Orleans. My name is Brandon Adams. We are, as always, presented to you by Marco's Pizza, getting ready for the Sugar Bowl tomorrow between Georgia and Texas. And I tell you, it's been very interesting to be walking around today, first of all, with what is a very rainy New Orleans, as you can see from the background behind us, the Mississippi River almost completely covered in fog, the streets covered with puddles as Georgia fans dodge in and out of raindrops to make their way around here the Big Easy on New Year's Eve. But as we've traveled around the city today, one of the things that's also been really interesting is to listen to the mindset of Georgia fans ahead of Texas tomorrow. And no doubt about it, there is still a bit of a, no pun intended, dark cloud hanging over Dog Nation after watching the two national semifinal games on Saturday night, where neither of the losers in those games, Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl against Alabama or Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl against Clemson, neither of the losers of those games did very much to validate their presence in the college football playoff, seemingly reigniting the debate that Georgia fans have been having for the last month, that it's truly Georgia who was one of the four best teams in America, and truly Georgia who belonged in the college football playoff, possibly even getting a rematch with the Alabama Crimson Tide. That's an intense debate here in New Orleans right now. Georgia fans are having it. But what you're also seeing this, as you get closer to the Superdome, as you get closer to the game tomorrow, there's also a little bit of a focus in on the fact that Texas is a game worth playing against an opponent that matters. One of the 10 winningest programs in all of college football history. That burnt orange Longhorn emblem that's on the side of the white helmets for Texas, that's obviously one of the most recognized symbols in college football. So you really have twin ideas and attitudes among Georgia fans right now. That the Sugar Bowl is a whole lot of fun to be at, and Texas is an opponent that really matters in a game worth winning. And yet there is some anger still, admittedly, on the part of Georgia fans, and if you were paying attention to social media on Saturday night from Georgia players about not being one of those four best teams, at least in the eyes of the College Football Selection Committee, not being included in the college football playoff. Now, for what it's worth, Texas coach Tom Herman met with the media earlier today. The first question out of the box to Herman was about how Georgia compares to a team that Herman knows well, the Oklahoma Sooners. Texas, as you're probably aware, played Oklahoma twice this season. A regular season game that was won by the Longhorns, and in the Big 12 Championship, a game won by Oklahoma. That's what allowed Oklahoma to punch its ticket into the college football playoff. The way the question was phrased to Herman, though, was certainly quite deft. The question comes up of, do you think that Georgia is the best team that you've seen on film all season long? Obviously being aware that Herman had seen Oklahoma a bunch. Well, Herman, facing a deft question, had a deft answer. Tiptoeing around the landmine that is Georgia compared to teams like Oklahoma and Notre Dame, the teams that got included in the college football playoff. Take a listen to this, and I think it sets us up for a pretty interesting conversation. As Herman does his part not to say anything that's going to anger Oklahoma fans, but also not to say anything that's going to anger Georgia fans. Here's Tom Herman facing the question of the day a little earlier this morning from New Orleans. Take a look right now.
Is Georgia the best team you've seen on tape this year, and why or why not?
I don't know. You know, our rival to our north is pretty dang good, too. And, you know, we had two great games against them, and we respect the heck out of them. But different. It's hard to say best, you know, when you're talking about anything. And I would say certainly different. I think they pose some unique challenges with how big they are up front on both sides of the ball, which is something that is different for us. But best is difficult. They're certainly you know, as good as any team that we've played in our 2 years here.
Is Georgia the best team you've seen on tape this year?
So you get a chance to hear from Texas coach Tom Herman there. And what Herman says, I think, is pretty interesting because on the one hand, he acknowledges that Georgia is as good as any team that he's seen over the 2 years that he's been there in Austin. And yet he also acknowledges that Oklahoma is a very good team, too. And the one phrase that Herman uses there a lot is the notion of different. Oklahoma is just different than Georgia. Which running game is better? He was also asked that during this press conference today. And once again, he pivoted back to the idea that Oklahoma, the team that got into the college football playoff, is different from Georgia, the team team that just missed out. And Georgia fans understand that full well. They saw the side-by-side comparison of Georgia and Oklahoma in the college football playoff a year ago playing in the Rose Bowl. Oklahoma is a very good team and a very good program, even this year, in a year in which they, for the most part, were handled easily by Alabama. And they are quite different from Georgia. So, to a certain extent, Herman's explanation there is easy to understand, that a comparison between Georgia and Alabama, or I should say Georgia and Oklahoma, is made more challenging by the fact that both these teams have such different strategic objectives when they go into a football game. However, even though Herman tries to be somewhat politically correct with his answer and not really anger any of the factions involved, let's face it here. Those words from Herman are going to stir up Georgia fans, because it doesn't take a lot to stir up Georgia fans right now. The Georgia fan that I've talked to a lot, both in the DN90 show presented by Dixie Vodka we did live last night, on the Facebook Live broadcast we did driving down the road to get to New Orleans on Sunday afternoon, heard from a lot of Georgia fans in the wake of what happened on Saturday, and the sort of business-as-usual attitude that comes from college football, where, of course, the Big 12 conference champion with only one loss, of course that team makes the college football playoff. And, of course, undefeated Notre Dame at 12-0. They're definitely going to make the college football playoff, because that's how business is done in college football. I think there are a lot of Georgia fans right now that are questioning the sort of business-as-usual approach to college football and concern about how, in this particular case, that seems to be harming UGA. We've also seen a lot of Georgia players voice their issues with that on social media over the last 48 hours as well. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to actually hear from Georgia coach Kirby Smart. We'll hear his press conference as he addressed a lot of issues facing his team heading towards the Sugar Bowl tomorrow, including his belief of whether or not, you know, Georgia should even be worried about the fact that it wasn't included in the college football playoff. That's coming up from Kirby Smart here in a moment. But before that, on this very special edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, live from the Riverwalk in New Orleans, with the Mississippi River in the background and the rainy skies and foggy conditions kind of hanging over us, we'll take some of your comments here about what you heard from Tom Herman there and about what your attitude as a Georgia fan is going into a game tomorrow where, as we addressed last night in our video broadcast, all of a sudden there are a lot of national media people and maybe fans of programs other than Georgia and Texas paying attention to this game in a way they otherwise would not have been. Georgia has talked a lot about its desire to be included, its demand that it should have been more strongly considered for the college football playoff, and that has made some people curious to see if Georgia can back up that level of talk against the Longhorns tomorrow. Dare I say, even the Longhorns themselves are thinking a bit about that. So there may be a little extra pressure on Georgia now because of what it believes about itself after being excluded from the college football playoff. So we'll let you sound off on that. Your thoughts as Georgia gets ready to take on Texas in the Sugar Bowl tomorrow. You hear the horn in the background. I kind of got a little bit of a jump and a startle off of that. One of these riverboats behind us must be getting ready to take off and do something. So for those of you that saw me jump there, you got a little bit of a treat out of that, I guess. All right, so let me take a few comments, and then we'll hear from Georgia coach Kirby Smart on this special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Zach Smith says, if you haven't watched DeAndre Swift's interview yesterday, you should. The dude is awesome. Yeah, check that out on the Dog Nation video channels, YouTube especially, probably on Facebook as well. You can see Swift's comments. I was very impressed with those also. DeAndre Swift, great job meeting with the media yesterday. Check that out on the Dog Nation video channels, especially the Dog Nation YouTube page. Appreciate you sharing that. By the way, let me say welcome to our YouTube audience. I know we got a little bit of a late start over there. But those of you watching us on YouTube, we're glad to have you on this special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. And, of course, to our podcast audience as well, as always. A little different format for us, which we know for the podcast audience is the most different experience of all. So we appreciate you checking on the podcast version of Dog Nation Daily here today on this very special New Year's Eve. And Happy New Year to you, wherever you may be around Dog Nation. Troy Bullard says, where can you see the DeAndre Swift interview? Troy, go to the Dog Nation on YouTube. And by the way, if you're not subscribed and following Dog Nation on YouTube, my encouragement would certainly be an opportunity to do that. Check that out, Dog Nation on YouTube, and you can see the DeAndre Swift interview there. And it's just a great way to stay connected to Dog Nation with what you have going on in a video sense by subscribing not just to the Dog Nation Facebook page, but Dog Nation on YouTube as well. Gary Strickland is saying that Waycross is in the house. Good to have the folks from down there at the Okefenokee Swamp checking in here on this special edition of Dog Nation Daily today. Petey Wheatstraw says, those barge horns are more scarier than longhorns, huh, B.A.? Yeah, Petey, I guess that's probably true. Shabazz Ali excited about the potential of a Holyfield-Swift tandem against Texas tomorrow. And I know a lot of Georgia fans feel very much the same way. Dustin Goodwin says, how is the fan ratio thus far? Dustin, that's a really good question. I think it's been a little bit tricky to tell because of the fact that this is going to sound funny, but I mean this seriously. There has been a lot of rain gear thus far, and you know, while every Georgia fan's got red and black shirts and sweaters and everything else, Texas fans have their burnt orange and white. Rain gear is sort of whatever color you can get it in some cases. So we have seen a lot of rain gear today. I don't know that I've seen a dominant percentage for either of the two fan bases yet. But certainly with this being New Year's Eve and a lot of folks out and about later on today, we may get a better idea of that. And we'll try to make mention of that on various social media platforms. As of yet, I haven't really gotten a scorecard weigh-in on which of the two sides is representing the strongest. Justin Sisk, concerned about those big receivers for Texas. They obviously have two very big ones. In a moment, when we hear from Georgia coach Kirby Smart, he'll talk about the preparations that Georgia has made to try to get ready for little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson. And I think it's really interesting there. You're going to hear a couple names mentioned that we haven't heard mentioned a lot during the season, including that of Tommy Bush, the outstanding signee from the 2018 class, who wasn't really an impact player on the field for Georgia this season, but it sounds like in terms of giving Georgia a scout team look at the Texas offense, Bush has been instrumental in doing just that. So we'll hear more from Kirby Smart on just a moment. Stacy Bonds checking in from New Mexico. Stacy, thanks for being here today. Tim Wilson says, do you think we were going to cover the double-digit spread with Texas getting more fired up with UGA, you know, thinking it should be in the playoff? I think the point spread is going to be very interesting tomorrow. And I was watching this a lot as we were getting ready to make our way to New Orleans. I haven't seen it today. I'm assuming it's still floating around that 12.5, 13 number. I wrote about this at dognation.com yesterday morning. And if you haven't checked out the By the Numbers piece, I hope you will. One of the things that I talked about there was the absence of DeAndre Baker and how, you know, conventional wisdom among fans is that Baker not playing ought to impact the final score, and that ought to be reflected in the point spread. But historically speaking, when you look at the way that Las Vegas and the online sports books responds to missing players, and that's typically an injury. In Baker's case, it's not an injury. But when you look at the way that Vegas and the sports books respond to that, there's not typically a huge fluctuation in that spread. So to go back to the question answered asked by the commenter a little earlier, you know, will the point spread be in play for Georgia tomorrow? I certainly think it needs to be. I think that Georgia needs a convincing win against Texas. I think that establishes the momentum that Georgia needs to head into the 2019 season. I think it'd be a resounding, rebuttal to the critics here who've said Georgia had no argument for the college football playoff. Certainly beating up on Texas would go a long way towards determining that. And so that two-touchdown margin there about, that could be a very interesting thing to keep your eye on tomorrow. Let's take a few more comments before we hear from Georgia coach Kirby Smart on this special live edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza here at the New Orleans Riverwalk with the Mississippi River in the background and a lot of fog rolling in here, hoping for some better weather at some point in time. Obviously, a lot of the festivities that surround not just the Sugar Bowl but New Year's itself, obviously not going to be quite 100% if we don't get a little bit better weather right now. But the forecast has predicted a lot of rain now for quite some time here. All right, Melinda Moe with a great reference to the 84 Cotton Bowl, always being 10-9 in Texas. And isn't it ironic, Melinda, that tomorrow's game, at least for those of you on the Eastern time zone, could actually be starting 10-9. So that's quite an interesting thing to think about, Melinda. Great stuff there. Michael Wilson says, see you in New Orleans, BA. Michael, hope to see you there. And any of you who do happen to be in New Orleans here right now, I would love to have you throw up your hands and wave at us. We've already had a chance to say hello to a lot of folks. And if we see you, please come over and introduce yourself. Connor Riley's our friend from Good Day UGA and, of course, a lot of other projects here around Dog Nation. He's been typically with me the entire time. So Connor and I both would love to say hello to you and say thanks for your support of Dog Nation. Thomas Dozier, back to the subject of the college football playoff, says the Clemson defensive line looked crazy good. That's one area UGA is lacking. And obviously, Thomas, I think that's one of the things that you've seen Kirby Smart try to address when it comes to the 2019 signing class. Georgia's obviously tried to beef up its defensive line, not just its defensive line, but really its front seven all the way around. You know, you've brought in big guys that can clog the middle like Zion Logue, but you've also brought in, you know, an interesting, versatile player like Trayvon Walker, who maybe plays some three techniques and five technique, moves around a little bit like you kind of think of Jonathan Ledbetter having done for Georgia a little bit. Then when you add Jermaine Johnson and Nolan Smith as those outside linebacker guys, a better front seven for Georgia, something more resembling what Clemson has used as its formula for making the college football playoff, that is certainly something that you could see a whole lot more of from Georgia in 2019 and beyond. All right, it is a very special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. My name is Brandon Adams. Thanks so much for being a part of it here live on video, 10 a.m. normally, not today, on the Dog Nation YouTube, Facebook, the Twitter feed. We're on the radio every day at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Of course, this show, like all others, will be available as a podcast. Thank you so much for subscribing to Dog Nation Daily as a podcast. And as we close out the 2018 year here, let me say thanks so much for making this such a great year for Dog Nation. It is so much fun to get a chance to speak to you each and every day. You have given me the thrill of a lifetime to be able to talk about Georgia this past year, and I'm excited about doing this for many more years to come. And a huge thanks to Marco's Pizza as well. And folks, if you're getting ready to settle in and watch some football here this weekend, including the big game tomorrow, don't forget a great offer and an opportunity for you to take advantage of that can feed all the folks there in your household and your family. Take advantage of two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. It's an everyday value. There's no coupon to clip. There's no promo code to remember. It's just every store, every day, the Italian way at Marcos.com. Check that out. Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each, and enjoy that as you enjoy some college football this weekend, including our big game tomorrow. All right, we've got a lot more of your questions and comments to come here live from the Riverwalk in New Orleans. We're going to do our part to stay dry, but we also want to do our part to keep you updated on Kirby Smart's final thoughts before he heads towards the Superdome tomorrow for the Sugar Bowl against Texas. He faced a lot of questions from the media. The subject of the college football playoff comes up. The subject of those preparations for Texas come up. The subject of DeAndre Baker, Mel Tucker's absences, that all comes up here. It's a wide-ranging conversation with Kirby Smart, and as a part of this special Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, we wanted you to be able to see some of it. So here live from New Orleans, enjoy Kirby Smart right now.
It's one of the first-class bowls in the country, always has been, and Georgia has great tradition and history here with the All-State Sugar Bowl. I'd also like to take this opportunity to wish Coach Richt a happy retirement. He's meant a lot to me in my career, hired me, and been very thorough and helpful in my career, and been a big beneficiary of Coach of the University of Georgia. He's given so much back to the University of Georgia, and been such a good man and leader of this institution. So I want to wish him well in his retirement. And then also Ben Watson, who, you know, 15-year career in the NFL is coming to an end, and he's such a great representative. He spoke to our team last year in one of the most compelling talks that we've ever had, and we hope to get him back a lot more now that he's got some more free time coming up after this season. So I'm excited about those guys. As we look at Texas and this opportunity our team has, I think the opportunity in front of our team is as grand as there is, as there can be, because for our guys, they're looking at it as an opportunity to play to a standard, to make a statement, to play to the excellence that we tried to create at the University of Georgia. They've got an opportunity to do that against one of the top programs in the country. The guy that just walked out of here, Tom Herman, I've had immense respect for a long time. Saw what he did firsthand at Ohio State with the offense. That led to Houston, where he had an unbelievable coaching career, did a great job, and now he's turning Texas around. So I know the standard that he has. I know the way they practice. I know the leadership qualities he has, and I know the recruiting base he has. So we know that we're up against a very, very, very respectable opponent who does a great job on both sides of the ball and special teams. So our kids acknowledge that. The last, I guess, 30 days, 31 days, whatever it's been since our last game, have been wild and crazy because there's been a lot of action in all of college football, but especially with the University of Georgia, and we're really excited to get back out on the field and play a game.
We'll now open the floor to questions. We'll start over on my left towards the center.
Murray Poole, Bulldog Illustrated. Kirby, you've got two physical receivers in J.J. Holloman and Riley Ridley. That said, how have they been able to prepare you in defending Texas tall receiver, little Jordan Humphrey, 6'4", and 6'6", Khalid Johnson? Have they been able to give the secondary the looks they need in practice to try to defend two guys like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you'll actually know that until the game, because those two receivers for Texas are as big and as physical as we faced all year. They do a great job of mixing those guys up and moving them around and creating matchups for them. They got a lot of secondaries in the Big 12 who've pressed them. They've got guys who've played off of them. Those wideouts are elite wideouts, and they're not just elite because of their ability to catch. They're physical. They block. They're tough. We've faced some big wideouts a couple times at LSU. We faced some wideouts of good size in our offense, but none quite like these two. So this dynamic will be unique, and we've tried to simulate that, but not necessarily with just Riley and JJ. I mean, we've had Matt Landers and Tommy Bush, who are good size-wise, maybe not the same bulk as those two, but we've been able to get some good matchups and some good contest out there with those guys.
Over on my right side in the center here.
Hi, Coach. Steve Helwick, TSTV. Without DeAndre Baker, how difficult has it been adjusting with the new look secondary this week? And has DeAndre contributed to any game prep for this?
Yeah, DeAndre's done a great job from a leadership standpoint, confidence standpoint for those two guys. As far as the difficulty of preparing for it, the difficulty comes tomorrow because he's not out there. The prep so far has not been difficult because he's not there. It's been concerning, you know, because you got a little bit more unknown when he's not out there. You feel really comfortable the last however many games, 3 years, that DeAndre's going to control his side of the field. Now you've got not two guys that they have experience. They don't have the experience of DeAndre Baker, who get an opportunity to go out and play. And that's probably the most exciting thing, seeing those guys play.
We'll shift back over here on the front row.
Jake Rowe, Dogs 247. We had a chance to ask Jim about this yesterday. Kind of a whirlwind type thing with Stetson Bennett now rejoining you guys' program. It's the first time we've had a chance to ask you about it. What did you guys see in that, in bringing him back, and how – I know you guys tried to hold on to him before he left the first time. How excited are you to kind of bring a guy like that back who's so well?
Well, I'm very excited. I think anytime you get a chance to bring someone in your program who's a proven commodity, that you know what they stand for, you know how they practice each day, you know how they come to work, you know his love for the University of Georgia. Here's a young man that grew up in the state, had an opportunity to go to several universities, chose to come to Georgia as a walk-on, really played well, earned a scholarship, decided to go to a junior college. Played well there, led his team to a championship game. And now he's got an opportunity to come back into a very similar system that he left. And I'm proud of the fact we were able to get him to come back because he had other opportunities. And we're looking forward to working with him.
Over on the right side toward the back of the room.
Mike Griffith, AJC Dog Nation. Coach, two things. One, if you could update us on DeAndre Walker and Jordan Davis, their status for the game. And two, when you said the team was going to play to make a statement. What is the statement? Is it that Georgia was one of the four best or another type statement?
No, I think anytime you think standard and statement for us, it's really speaking to the fact that we want to play to our brand of football, to our level of competition. You know, make no bones about it. You know, they're representing their conference, we're representing our conference, and that's always a challenge. You know, everybody plays the SEC with a chip on their shoulder. So we're coming to play to a standard and make a statement to ourselves that we are an elite program. We want to be considered that. We want to be in that conversation. And I think to do that, you've got to play to a standard. And that's our goal for our kids. As far as the injuries, you know, DeAndre Walker struggled a little bit. His groin's been bothering him. Hasn't been able to go full speed. He'll be a game time decision. Maybe situational that we're able to use him. And then Jordan Davis has kind of been the same. Maybe a situational player that he can play in certain situations. But to be honest, both those guys have struggled to get back 100%.
Back over left center.
Mark Weiser, Athens Banner-Herald. Kirby, you mentioned about some crazy or wild and crazy times since the SEC championship game. Can you tell about the level of how locked in your team is to this game? And is that hard to gauge for, bowl teams?
Well, I don't think it's anything to do with the bowl game. I think it's week to week. You would question, as a head coach, where are we as from a standpoint of focus and concentration? I don't think you ever know that. So with that much time, it makes it a lot harder because you really don't want them focused on the bowl game for 30 days. You want them focused on getting better for 20, 25 of those days. They've got to concern themselves with final exams, decisions they have to make, so many other things going on. We just want to coach and get better. Well, the last, I would say, 10 days, we really focused on Texas, and our kids have understood that. They've understood the importance of that. You want to grow that momentum into the game for the excitement of the game. 8:45 kickoff, nationally televised audience, only game going on. So we want those kids ready to go play, and we want to have good tempo when it comes to that. I certainly have confidence in our kids' focus and concentration because they turn the tape on. They see Texas beat an Oklahoma and get on top of an Oklahoma in a championship game, who's a team we got full amount of respect for, and understand the caliber of a team like Texas. And most of our kids nowadays, they grew up and got recruited with these same kids from Texas. They went to all-star games. So they know every one of these players, and they know that these guys are good football players. So it's not about that for us. It's about how we play and how we control our standard.
Back over on the right side, on the far right.
Kirk Bowles from the Austin American Statesman. Kirby, do you like the current targeting rule, or do you think it's too punitive and needs to be adjusted? And how in the hell do you coach tackling anymore?
Yeah, it's hard to coach tackling. It's hard to be argumentative with a rule that's meant to provide safety. And I think when you look at it from a standpoint of, does your child play football, and how would you want your child coached in football? I certainly don't want anybody teaching my son to lead with a helmet or crown of a helmet. I think the hardest part is the judgment of mid-level targeting, where we're trying to go for the middle of a person and they move, and then all of a sudden you end up with a targeting. That's the toughest thing, but that's part of the game. And you can't say, well, I'm going to make it okay for this one, but not okay for this one. So it's a fine line, and it's really tough. And as long as it's making our sport safer, because what I hate to see is injuries deter a sport that I think is really good for people. And I think this sport teaches you so many life lessons that because it's got some injury stuff in it, we've got to do a really good job of protecting our players on both sides of the fence. But tackling's tough, and in bowl games in particular, we've talked really hard and showed examples every day of how tackling disappears during bowl games.
Back over left center.
Kirby, Jeff Schultz of The Athletic. Two things. First of all, what have you learned as a coach in terms of how you get kids to rebound from disappointment? And then also, is there anything in particular about this season that you think will help the players who are returning next year, next season?
Say that again. Your first question was rebound, you said? Or
rebounding from disappointment, what you've learned as a coach. And then also, is there anything in particular about the experiences of this season that will help players next year?
Yeah, the first thing, I think disappointment's a part of life. I think everybody in this room could say that they've been disappointed at some time or another, or they've been let down, but it actually makes, when you do things well, that much grander. Because if you just won all the time or you just had success all the time, you would never feel the agony of that disappointment. So we have to embrace that in order to really enjoy the other side of it, which is what we do this for. So the comeback is what you do this for. So this is our opportunity to go out and finish it and do it the right way, and we want to do that. As far as what our players have learned from this season that might help them next year, I think the biggest thing is focus and concentration on every game. I mean, for us, we played in a tough, hostile environment in LSU, and we didn't play our best game. We didn't coach our best game, me in particular. So I think when you start with that you've got to be at your best every single game, because in the end, they all matter, especially in the SEC. So whether it's that game, another game, you got to continue to grow and get better, which I really felt like our team developed and got better throughout the year, and we got to continue to do that next year.
Back over on the far right.
Coach, Jake Wallace with WTOC-TV in Savannah. What are your thoughts? What are you going to remember about this year's senior class, and what's going to be your message to them tomorrow night before you take the field with them?
I think the biggest thing is they can leave a lasting legacy. And what is your legacy going to be? I mean, they've got a chance to be the second or tied for the second winningest program. I mean, senior class to come out of this this program, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. Now, they've also got the beneficiary of more games than some of the past teams in the 80s. But it's pretty incredible what they've been able to do in a short time. And I want them to think about, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want people to say about you? You know, you want them to say that you gave out and laid everything on the line and competed as hard as you could, because a lot of these seniors, this will be their last football game. And I want them to have a positive taste in their mouth, and want them to be able to come back to the University of Georgia and be proud of the fact that they were able to win a New Year's Six Bowl, and I think that's really important.
Once again, left center over here.
Coach, Brandon Sutch with the Macon Telegram. Great crap. So as you take a look at your tight end room, I guess this is more of a question about the progression and evaluation over practices, but as there's some things up in the air with Isaac and Luke Ford as they go forward, what type of things do you see from those other guys who maybe haven't gotten the opportunity to contribute this year, and how they might play an asset going forward?
Well, first off, I think Charlie Warner does a tremendous job. Charlie's one of the most athletic, physical blockers, especially for a guy that played every position in high school football, defense, receiver, everything. He grew into a tight end body, and he's one of the toughest, hardest workers, and never complains, never says a word in practice, just works. And he's gotten a lot better throughout his career and will continue to do so. Throughout these bowl practices, John Fitzpatrick's made a bunch of plays. You know, he's had to do probably the toughest job on our team. He doubles as a tight end on the scout team. He's had to play some tackle on the scout team due to a number of injuries on the offensive line throughout the season. But he's grown and gotten better. And I think when you put those two guys out there, they both have a chance to help us. And that's with the stuff we've got up in the air you mentioned.
Simmons, ESPN Radio. Probably should have asked you this earlier. Mel Tucker, defensive coordinator, now the head coach of Colorado. Will you be calling defensive sets in this game?
We'll be doing it by committee, as we've talked about. So we've got a group and a staff that worked really hard together. And, you know, between Dan, Schumann, Trey Scott, myself, the GAs worked really hard. Both Wendell and Bakari have done a great job stepping up and helping from that standpoint. So we do it by committee most of the time anyway. I mean, Mel called the defenses for us. But between series, during the week game planning, it was done by committee because that's how you put a game plan together. But that's very similar to how it'll be done in this game.
Back over on the left in the center.
Hey, Kirby, this is Anthony Dash of UGASports.com. Just wondering your thoughts on the two playoff games the other day. Anything that you saw, I don't know, maybe it further validated your opinion that you should have been one of those teams taking part.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. We were practicing and working during the Clemson-Notre Dame, so we finished about somewhere around the third quarter. I didn't get to see hardly any of that because we came in as a coaching staff and watched the tape. I got to see some of the Alabama in Oklahoma game, and certainly thought that both those teams are really powerful offensive football teams and played a good football game. But our concern, Anthony, as you well know, is with Texas, and everything that we'll be judged on is how we finish, and we want to finish the right way, and we want to play our best football game at the end of the year, which is tomorrow night.
We've got two right over here, but I believe the gentleman in the light blue shirt. Oh, okay, go ahead. Go ahead in the front.
Hey, Ryan Dennis with the Athens Banner here. You talked about Mark Richt at the top of the press conference. What did he mean to you on a personal level? And then, you know, I guess, what do you recall when he kind of hired you in 05 or whatever?
Yeah, Mark's been great for my personal career because I got to meet what is now my wife during my time coming back to the University of Georgia. He gave me an opportunity to coach on the offensive side of the ball, which, as I have always said, was a different perspective for me. You know, Neil Callaway was the offensive coordinator and Mike Bobo was the quarterback's coach, and they fought to hire me when there was a defensive position on the staff I didn't get hired for. Mark had enough confidence in me as a coach and a recruiter to hire me as running back's coach. And it's one of the most valuable years of my career because it was the most different. And I would have had that opportunity were it not for him and his wife, Catherine. So what they've done for the city of Athens and University of Georgia is incredible, and they're great people.
We'll stay on this side of the room over against the wall.
Kirby, Josh Mixon, Macon Telegraph. You touched on this a bit at the beginning of your opening statement, but how has the perception of Texas as a program maybe changed from where it was when Coach Herman first took the job?
Well, that's a tough one because I don't really know where that perception was when he took the job. I mean, we didn't play them the time I was at Alabama, and we didn't really play them since I've been at Georgia. So it's kind of like we've kind of overlapped since he took over. I think the national brand of Texas has stepped up with some of the bigger games they've been able to play in. I know from a recruiting standpoint, we've gone head-to-head because he's come to Georgia and recruited nationally. He's come to Florida and recruited nationally, and we've gone to Texas. So we've had more times that we've actually crossed paths than I ever remember during my time at University of Alabama. So he's done a tremendous job from that standpoint. But they've never really gone anywhere from a standpoint of football players looking at football players. These kids look at things completely different than the men and women in this room, including myself, because they have a generation of going to play in all-star games and having social media as a format in which they interact with these kids on other teams. They know these kids on other teams, and they know the caliber of football players. They see the track times in Texas. They see the all-star games in Texas. They know there's high-quality football players in the state of Texas.
We have time for two more questions. We'll first in the center on the left.
Anthony again, Coach. We have DeAndre again, Walker Limited. Kind of, who stands to benefit from maybe additional playing time? And talk about the confidence you have in those individuals.
Well, behind him, we've got a group of freshmen that have all kind of played different roles throughout the year with Brenton Cox, Robert Beal, Aziz, getting an opportunity to work in that group too with the time we've had, extended time we've had to practice, getting him prepared. And then, you know, you got to look at Malik Herring and other guys that play defensive end. So it'll be done by committee and hopeful to get the most and the best out of all those young players who are going to get an opportunity to play.
And the final question on the far left over here.
Hey, Coach. Zach Klein from Channel 2 in Atlanta. You talk about the importance of the extra practices. Who kind of stood out last year and took advantage of that extra time and has been one of the youngsters on your squad that has made the most of these extra opportunities this year?
I think the first one that comes to mind would be Aziz. I mean, when we go back and look at, we were going to work on us for, I don't know, 5-6 practices. We call them camp practices, where we would work on Texas a little bit. But Aziz is a kid that came out with an attitude of, I'm going to go play. I want to get better. He did a great job of that. Channing and Quay. I think the young O-linemen really grew up. Now, they had grown up. Y'all saw them most of the year in Cade Mays and Trey Hill, but those guys grew up a lot. I thought Tommy and Matt made strides as football players. So when you look across the board, John Fitzpatrick, I mentioned earlier during bowl practices, a lot of these guys start to step to the forefront and get an opportunity to hear things a second and third time where they're not overwhelmed at the speed of the install. They start making some plays, and you realize, hey, this guy's a really good football player. He's going to be able to help our team at some point.
Back here live at the New Orleans Riverwalk, Brandon Adams on a special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Just got a chance to hear a fascinating press conference. Georgia coach Kirby Smart, his thoughts on the Sugar Bowl as the Dogs get ready to take on Texas tomorrow night. Don't forget, Dog Nation will have live coverage all day and into the night tomorrow of what's going to happen in the Superdome against the Texas Longhorns. That includes our Kroger kickoff before the game and Northside Hospital postgame coverage both after the game, which will admittedly be pretty late. Also, a lot of Northside Hospital postgame coverage the following morning as well. So, Dog Nation Daily tomorrow morning, back at a more normal time for the program, going to have, should have a lot of the stuff from the locker room and what Georgia players have to say, coaches have to say. After that Sugar Bowl game, you can see a lot of that from us on Wednesday as part of a special Dog Nation Daily with post-game coverage presented by Northside Hospital. Here on this special edition of our program today, though, with the New Orleans Riverwalk in the background and the fog rolling in and what appears to be the rain stopping for now, which could be a good news for the folks who are looking forward to celebrating New Year's Eve here in New Orleans. We may get a little bit of a break in the rain to give them a chance to do that. I do want to finish up our program today by taking a lot more of your comments, giving you a chance to sound off for the final time before Georgia takes on Texas tomorrow night. And I've done a lot of Facebook comments earlier. My buddy Connor Riley has allowed me to use his phone. I'm going to knock out some of these YouTube comments also to check out our friends in the YouTube comment section. We'll try to hit Facebook again before we're done here as well. But let me go to the YouTube comment section. And I see where Eric Smith is talking about Tyson Campbell. And Eric, I think that you're right to bring up Campbell because obviously he's a much more important name in this game tomorrow night, given the fact that DeAndre Baker won't be there. And many of us obviously saw during the Orange Bowl, Alabama's freshman cornerback, Patrick Surtain Jr., was really challenged a lot by Oklahoma. And a lot of those instances, Surtain was probably left lacking a little bit as he was targeted over and over again and gave up some big pass plays. Obviously, we've seen Campbell have some freshman issues for Georgia back when he was a starter earlier in the year. He was replaced by Eric Stokes. We expect Stokes to start again tomorrow night, and the assumption here is that Campbell could step in place of DeAndre Baker. Here's what my guess is, though, Eric, and for everyone else who's interested to see what Tyson Campbell does. I think you're going to see a player in Campbell who uses the experience that he's gained throughout the season to play better tomorrow night than maybe we've seen him at any point in time. I still feel very confident that Tyson Campbell is going to have a great career at Georgia. One day, he could be thought of as just as good a defensive back as DeAndre Baker's currently thought of. And for him, that could start tomorrow night. It's certainly a great opportunity for him to show the growth and development he's had over the course of his freshman season and set the standard for what could happen next year when, other defensive backs are going to be coming in the fold. Georgia obviously still hopes for Tyreek Stevens to be one of those names. Stevens is going to make his announcement on January 5th. You may have seen some of the stuff that he tweeted recently, a little more favorable to Miami. There is a thought, though, that the hay may already be in the barn for him one way or another. But on January 5th, we'll find out what Stevenson's choice is. Georgia's still hoping to hear some good news from Kyer Lam as well. DJ Daniels coming in, and next year, a lot of those guys will be in the same boat that Tyson Campbell's been in this year. And Campbell will have that extra year of experience. I'm certain he'll probably be able to use a lot of that to his advantage. Let's take a few more comments here. Joshua Simmons on YouTube says, I hope everyone has a great holiday. Joshua, you too as well. Happy New Year to all of you checking in here on Dog Nation here today. Dapper Dan referencing Matt Landers and Tommy Bush, who Kirby Smart had some complimentary things to say about. This is 2 years in a row for Landers, who's gotten credit as being a scout team receiver. That's probably not the accolade that he's looking to have, scout team receiver 2 years in a row, who's performed well heading into a bowl. But certainly Georgia's in a good position having guys like Bush and Landers, at least from a physical standpoint, that can resemble somewhat what the very good Texas receivers, and that is probably the strength of that team, especially with a little Jordan Humphrey. It sounds like Bush and Landers have been able to give Georgia a bit of a look of what the Longhorns wideouts will be able to show on Tuesday night. So interesting stuff there from Kirby on that. C. Hill says, I'll be all for Justin Fields staying. C. Hill, I completely agree with that as well. I do think at this point in time, the possibility that Fields is in a Georgia uniform again next year grows more remote, seemingly by the day, maybe even by the hour. But obviously, if Fields were to change his mind and make the unorthodox decision to remain at Georgia, I certainly would welcome him with open arms, and I think a lot of Georgia fans would as well. Kirby Smart has said that he wants four scholarship quarterbacks. If Fields leaves, Georgia will have three after bringing in Stetson Bennett, of course, flip from Ohio State that joins Georgia, Dwan Mathis, and obviously Jake Fromm. Georgia's at three scholarship quarterbacks. According to Kirby Smart, they'd have room for a fourth if Justin Fields did decide to stay. G. Grace also mentioning some of the things that, speaking of Ohio State, their presumed starter, at least before the Fields rumors surfaced up, Tay Martell, who was very pointed in some of his remarks about Justin Fields yesterday, not mentioning Fields by name necessarily, but certainly mentioning his desire, Martell's, to compete intensely for that job. Of course, Ohio State's getting ready for the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California tomorrow, and they were meeting with the media, much like the Georgia players have for the last couple of days, and Martell was very, very direct in what he said about his desire to win that starting job and essentially suggesting that Justin Fields should go look elsewhere for a place to play football. I found that to be very interesting. C. Hill also says it's time to let Jake Fromm take over the offense. I think Fromm proved a lot with the way that he played over the final month of the season. I'm looking forward to seeing him capitalize on that momentum to more against Texas tomorrow night. I agree with that. Tram Dickerson says all the dog hate recently is going to make Fields want to stay to shut up all the critics. There's no doubt about that, Tram, that Georgia has grown with its share of critics as of late. Georgia's been outspoken about not making the college football playoff. There's a lot of pushback against the SEC and its belief as a league that this conference deserves more than one team in the college football playoff, not just last year and this year, but in some cases more years than not. And I got to tell you, I found myself being very frustrated watching these games on Saturday night because I tried to believe the idea that this Notre Dame team was different than some of the teams that we've seen the Irish put together in the past, that this Oklahoma team, despite the fact that it's not as physical as Alabama, might have some of the other components to really, challenge the Crimson Tide. The fact of the matter is, in neither case was either game ever in doubt. And, especially in the case of Notre Dame, who was the true fraud here, I think that Oklahoma actually performed pretty well once it got knocked out of the game to at least make it somewhat close and respectable. But Notre Dame's a total embarrassment. And anybody on the committee who would watch what happened there, or anybody in the national media who watched what unfolded on Saturday night and says, I've got no problem, even in hindsight, with putting Notre Dame in the college football playoff, then you're an embarrassment to the sport that you pretend to cover or that you pretend to be some sort of executive in charge of here. I think moving forward in the future, when you take these thick-ankled Big Ten teams and put them against a team from the Deep South, after all, Clemson plays very much a similar brand to what the rest of the SEC plays, at least the elite version of the SEC plays, you better have a good reason for thinking that game has a chance to be close. Because over and over again, we have seen examples of this. Go back to the BCS era. Go back as far as 2006 if you want to. Look at the era of the college football playoff. When an SEC team plus Clemson plays one of these teams, Ohio State or some team from outside the Southeast, more often than not, we've seen the team from the Southeast dominate that game. I'm sorry, we're just in an era now where this region, the region where I'm standing and the region where many of you live, this region just plays the sport at a much higher level than virtually anybody else. And I think what happened on Saturday cemented that over once again. So for the Georgia fans who are upset, for the Georgia fans, as I said off the top of the show, that are tired of business as usual, where, well, of course you take Notre Dame because they're undefeated. Of course you take the Big 12 champion because that's what you do. You take conference champions. I'm tired of that kind of stuff. I think if the college football playoff wants to have legitimacy, it needs to have the four best teams involved. I know that seems like a Georgia guy just arguing Georgia's case, and for the non-Georgia fans who are listening right now, I'm sure that's exactly the response that I'm probably going to get on that. But for me, this is bigger than Georgia. It goes beyond Georgia into future years. Not everybody in this country plays the sport at the same level. This is not Little League left field. Everyone is not guaranteed a turn. And in the case of Georgia, somebody else got the turn that the Bulldogs probably deserved. All right, let me take a few more comments, and we'll get ready to move on here. Let me go up a little earlier in the YouTube section because I haven't heard too much from the YouTube folks here today. Obviously, a lot of talk on Tyson Campbell still. Tyler Stolar says, if Lincoln Riley goes to the NFL, I believe Justin Fields will stay after the comments from Tate Martell. Tyler, I'll admit, I don't know how Justin Fields is going to respond to those Tate Martell comments. I don't know. I certainly think that makes a volatile situation for Columbus. And while I don't want to see Fields leave, if there's going to be a volatile, controversial quarterback situation, I'd much rather be up north in Ohio than down here in Georgia. I don't want to see Fields go, but if there's going to be that kind of infighting and that kind of public dispute among the two quarterbacks, better the Buckeyes than the Bulldogs. I think most Georgia fans would probably agree with that. I also think, and I know one of the things, Connor Riley, who is kind of our on-site producer, he has talked a lot about his belief that I think, Connor, I'm safe to say, you think Lincoln Riley is going to take an NFL job. He thinks, if not this year, eventually Riley's going to take an NFL job. And there's certainly a belief of strike while the iron's hot, especially with, you know, organizations that have quarterbacks looking for coaches. Green Bay comes to mind here, for instance. With that kind of stuff, you know, going on, maybe it makes sense for Riley to leave sooner rather than later. I think, though, what we've seen from Oklahoma, given the fact that even at the end of the Bob Stoops era, this offense was already starting to take shape, given what we've seen there back when Riley was still the offensive coordinator, given what we've seen there, I think Oklahoma now knows it has a very specific brand. And I think the next coach that it has is going to be someone that attempts to continue that brand. I'll give Connor Riley credit one more time. He suggested former Oklahoma quarterback and current UCF head coach Josh Heupel as a name that might make some sense there. Heupel was a very good offensive coordinator at Missouri a year ago. Before that, had record-setting offenses at Utah State. So that's a rising name in the coaching ranks, and he's working on an undefeated season at UCF, at least ahead of the Fiesta Bowl tomorrow against LSU. So as just a for instance, if that name were to go to Oklahoma, then the brand established of the Sooners of being a team that throws it a million times and puts up a lot of points, I think to a lot of prospects, they would view that as that brand somewhat surviving. What would that mean for Fields? I honestly don't know. I do think Oklahoma would be probably one of the programs, other than Ohio State, he'd be strongly considering. And obviously the name here is Jaden Hazelwood as well. That certainly is probably looking very closely at Oklahoma, and many people believe has probably already made a decision to go to the Sooners. We'll kind of follow that and see where it goes. We have a little bit of time remaining, and in the time we do have remaining, I want to take a couple of moments to talk about Mark Richt. And if you want to make comments about other things in the comments section, I'll try to mention those too. But I at least wanted to share my thoughts about Richt here on this special Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. I talked a good bit about Richt yesterday as part of a live DN90, but I didn't want this opportunity to go without speaking a little bit more about Richt. And I've had a chance to think a little more on that subject. Just having more time having passed since the somewhat surprising retirement announcement was made yesterday. And the thought that I end up having is, you know, I'm 41. I'll be 42 in February. So when Richt began his career at Georgia, I was of an age where I was just out of college. And, you know, I didn't have a ton of money. But the money that I did have was all discretionary income, right? I had no responsibilities. So I was really lucky and in a place where I could, you know, travel around a lot, get a chance to go see a lot of those games. I was lucky enough to be in the stadium in 2001 for the famous Hobnail Boo game. And we're lucky enough here on Dog Nation Daily where we've gotten to speak to David Green about that a lot over the years. I was lucky enough to be in Jordan-Hare Stadium in 2002 for the Michael Johnson touchdown catch that preserved Georgia's first ever SEC East win. And then a few weeks after that, I was in the Georgia Dome for the very first time that Georgia played in the SEC Championship. I saw in the stadium as a media member by 2005, but I saw the SEC Championship where Georgia upset LSU. And really, when you put together a list, and I'm sure that a lot of these lists are already being put out. I'm sure Dog Nation's probably got its own maybe even coming at some point in time. When you put together a list of the 5 or 10 greatest moments in the Mark Richt era at Georgia, I'm lucky enough to say that I was in the stadium for a lot of those. And I'm lucky enough to say that not only were those great moments Richt Georgia, but really a part of the fabric of me becoming the big sports fan that I am today in my 40s with kids of my own, and they're becoming sports fans too. And I look back on that time when I didn't have a care in the world other than traveling around to see Georgia play each and every Saturday. And, you know, Richt brought a lot of joy to people like me who were in a position to be able to do that. Now, different people were in different stages of life when that Richt era began, but I'm hopeful that you'll think back on those early 2000s years when Richt made going to Sugar Bowls a regularity, when he made SEC championships something that Georgia fans could talk about in the present tense and not just 2 decades in the past, which is what the story was before Richt came and took the Georgia job. I have incredibly fond memories of the Richt era at Georgia, in other words, and it has been a lot of fun over the last couple of days conjuring those memories back up one more time, and I hope you're having some fun doing the same thing. So with that in mind, let me take a few more comments before we get ready to wrap up this special edition of Dog Nation Daily here live from the New Orleans Riverwalk. Dapper Dan says Richt should be put on the playoff committee. I am really curious to see what Richt does next, what his next move is going to be. I'm really fascinated to see that. Tyler Stolar, going back to the subject of UCF, you know, if they were to lose without Mackenzie Milton, and obviously we've seen, you know, two quarterbacks be something that real, legitimate national championship contenders are supposed to have, and UCF playing without Milton tomorrow, that's just a fact of life. You know, Alabama's played multiple quarterbacks, and good teams have multiple good quarterbacks. Hashim Spike says 2002 was certainly a great season, and Hashim, I agree with you on that, that, you know, that was pre-playoff era, but the story of that season could have been very different had there been a playoff. Remember, the national champion that year, Ohio State, was a huge upset winner over Miami, so with different circumstances, maybe different things could have happened. As the rain, I'm hearing, kind of kicks back into gear here in New Orleans, it's that kind of day around the city of New Orleans. But even with those conditions, there's still no place we'd rather be. Connor's got one of these fancy phones where you don't have the home button. So let me see if I can get over here to the YouTube, the Facebook comment section before we get ready to go here. Let's try to do this one more time. Connor, get back this on Facebook for me. I'm going to take a few Facebook comments before we get ready to leave. You got to realize when it comes to like technology and things like that, I'm essentially 472 years old. So I'm going to try to get a few Facebook comments after spending a good bit of time there on YouTube. We'll get a few Facebook comments and get ready to sign off. By the way, while Connor's pulling that up, let me say a huge thanks to our buddy Michael Carville back in our Atlanta studio helping us be on the air today. Connor Raleigh here on site with us in New Orleans. Also, make sure you check out the great coverage of Mike Griffith and Chip Towers, who have written a ton here from New Orleans this week. And our buddy Jeff Sintel, who is in Orlando right now, getting ready for the Under Armour All-Star Game. And then, of course, heading his way over to San Antonio next week for the other All-Star Game. Good recruiting coverage from Jeff on the site there as well. Joey Waddell says, did Manny Diaz handle the new coaching job correctly? There's going to be a lot of Temple fans who don't necessarily think that he did because he just took that job. I think realistically speaking, if you're offered the Miami job after just taking the Temple job, you leave for the Miami job, especially for a guy like Diaz who seemingly treats this as something of a dream job opportunity. Here's the one thing I can't help but think about, though, and maybe I'm wrong for bringing this up. But if Diaz would take the Miami job this quickly after taking the Temple job, what was he doing behind the scenes while he was working for Mark Richt as a defensive coordinator? Something about that seems a little bit fishy to me. And for Richt now, you've got two straight DCs, Diaz at Miami and Pruitt at Georgia, who don't exactly seem to be the most loyal guys in terms of you know, how they handle their time working as lieutenant for Richt. I can't imagine that makes Richt feel particularly good to know that his defensive coordinators I shouldn't speak about the Diaz situation because we don't know exactly what was going on there behind the scenes, but the Pruitt situation was well documented. But if I'm Richt, something seems a little bit weird about Diaz immediately coming back and becoming head coach so quickly after leaving to be the Temple coach. I'd imagine he may have some thoughts about that. Gary King says, after all the Twitter comments, Georgia better show up tomorrow. And Gary, I don't deny that. I'm all for free speech, and I love seeing, you know, Georgia players having fun on social media. But there is an element of what some of the Georgia players have said over the last couple of days that I do think puts a little extra pressure on Georgia for how it performs against Texas. Now, maybe for a team like Georgia, they're so driven to make a point here, they don't care about the extra pressure. They welcome the eyeballs that are going to be on them because they want to show emphatically that Georgia's one of the four best teams. But I have to admit, I sort of agree with Gary on this. After everything that's been said, that's exactly what they better do. All right, a couple other comments, then we're going to get ready to wrap this thing up here today. Doggy Bone says, I'll never forget the 2007 season with Rick. The blackout, the end zone dance in Florida. Yeah, there were a lot of great memories back then, and I'm glad to know that, Doggy, you remember them as well as we do. Let me get a few more here. Ricky Whitworth says, you're talking about the Georgia Bulldogs here a little bit. Shane Guy says, Rick took UGA to the next step. Now Kirby's taking to another step. And I don't disagree with Shane on that, that there is seemingly an element of what Smart has in place that would make you believe that Georgia's about to go to higher places than Mark Rick was. And there's the counterbalance to that of, well, you know, through 3 years on the job, Kirby hasn't done anything that Mark Rick did. I don't know that I 100% agree with that from the standpoint of, you see an example here right now where we're standing in New Orleans of Georgia being in a major bowl for two consecutive seasons. That's a level of consistency that Rick didn't really achieve. Kirby Smart was the number one recruiting class for the 2018 cycle. Going to be, you know, number two in all likelihood for the 2019 cycle when it's all said and done. Number three for 2017. That's a level of talent acquisition that Mark Rick didn't possess at Georgia. So Kirby Smart's establishing some credentials that do make him unique from Rick. But his job at Georgia's also been made easier because he followed up on Mark Rick. So I think on my mantle, there's room to show appreciation for Smart and room to show appreciation for Mark Rick. And I think the Georgia fans kind of agree. Mark Godfrey says, how was Popeyes? Mark, I got to tell you, it's pretty good. It's crowded. A lot of folks apparently made the same decision we did. But for those of you who watched our video on Sunday when we reacted in the moment to Mark Rick, we did stop and get a little Louisiana kitchen there. So I guess Popeyes, you're welcome for the free plug on that. Robert Darrell Sykes, do you think that Rick will ever coach again? No, I do not. Which maybe makes him a little bit different than someone like, say, Paul Johnson, who I do think may coach again at some point in time. I don't know that I take retirement seriously in connection to Johnson, or maybe even connection to Urban Meyer. I think there's a chance that Meyer definitely coaches again. I think there's a chance that Johnson could coach again. Even Bob Stoops, I think, who's been now out of football for a while, I think for the right opportunity, I think that Stoops may return to coaching again at some point in time. But Rick's retirement, to me, feels like an actual retirement. And if you disagree with that, I'd love to hear from you in the comment section on that. Mike Bugioli, and Mike, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, in the Facebook comment section says, Rick was a good man, a good coach, but he did not win the big game. And obviously that's going to be the one thing that for a lot of Georgia fans is going to, you know, stick in their memory about Rick, is how close he came to winning the true big game, winning a national championship, and ultimately stopping just short of getting that done. It's undeniable. That's a part of Rick's resume. I guess on this, you know, weekend of his retirement, I'm more interested in the things that Rick did do well, bringing accomplishments to Georgia that the program had not seen in quite some time. For me, those are more top of mind right now than just missing out on that national championship. Let me get a couple more and we'll get ready to get out of here. Cliff Nelson, the LSU fan from our buddy, checking in to say, what's up, BA? Go Tigers and go Dogs. Cliff, good to have you here. Thanks for allowing your home state of Louisiana take good care of us here right now. All right, we're going to get ready to roll on here. Thanks so much for being a part of this live edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Don't forget, we got more video coverage coming today, and we'll give you some updates when we're ready to kind of get rolling with that. We are also going to be back tomorrow with a lot of regular game day coverage. We're essentially going to treat tomorrow like a regular Saturday, even though it's a Wednesday, or I'm sorry, it's Tuesday. I tell you, the holidays make it almost impossible to know what day of the week it is. Tomorrow's Tuesday for those of you who are like me trying to keep up with all this. We're going to treat it like a Saturday, though. We'll have a Kroger kickoff before the game. We will have Northside Hospital post-game coverage at least a little bit after the game. It's going to be pretty late for that. A lot of Northside Hospital post-game coverage the following morning, though, as a part of a special Dog Nation Daily for one final time here in the city of New Orleans. Before we get ready to wrap up on what is our final show for 2018, once again, a huge thanks to all of you for a great, great year. Thanks for making Dog Nation a special and fun place to be for me. Hope it's been enjoyable for you. Looking forward to seeing one more final time for a great group of UGA seniors out there on the field in the Superdome of Louisiana tomorrow. That's going to be a blast. Whatever you're doing for New Year's, hope it's with surrounded by family and friends. And I hope you have plenty of great memories of 2018 to look back and reflect on, and look forward to joining all of you for making even more memories in 2019. Happy New Year. Thanks for being a part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We'll talk to you again soon.